There's a controversy brewing in the Idaho legislature, and this time it's around public schools and the phrase, "In God We Trust." Our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, found out more about the controversy as well as a little bit of history behind it. Let's take a listen.
3 years ago, the Idaho legislature voted to prominently display the words, "In God We Trust," in the Idaho House and Senate chambers. At the time, sponsors said, the intent of that legislation was not to promote or protect any particular religion. Well, fast forward to this week, and House Bill 105, which came before the House Education Committee, and I will read part of House Bill 105. An education institution under the State Board of Education or the Board of Regents must display a durable copy or framed copy of the motto, "In God We Trust." And if it passes and is signed into law, it could go into effect as early as this summer. Dr. Stephanie Martin is here, author, scholar, and Frank and Bethany Church Endowed Chair of Public Affairs at Boise State University. Maybe you could start us off with a bit of context. In God We Trust, and if my history serves me right, this goes back to the Civil War era, right?
In God We Trust goes back to the Civil War era. Sometimes people try to reach all the way back to the founding, but that's a really particular view of the United States, not really a universally accepted sort of American way. During the Civil War, I think there was a Pennsylvania minister who suggested that the phrase, "In God We Trust," be placed on the nation's coins, and that that would be done to align the Northern cause of abolition with a kind of divine mandate. And so that happened then, and it is still there on our coins today. And that is the genesis of that. But it kind of fell to the wayside. That invocation didn't last. And then it came back during the Cold War era in the 1950s, when there was sort of a dramatic rise, we might say, in the fusion of rhetoric or language that puts government and politics together. And in 1955, President Eisenhower signed a bill that put the phrase, "In God We Trust," on all currency, not just coins, but on our paper money as well. The next year, Congress made "In God We Trust" the first official motto of the United States. So it's really only been since the 1950s and since the New Deal that that phrase, "In God We Trust," has been with us. And in fact, it was also during that same period that the phrase "Under God" was added to the Pledge of Allegiance. The original language of the pledge just was "one nation indivisible." It was not "one nation under God."
I want to bring in a piece of sound here. This is GOP House Representative Barbara Ehart, who voiced her support of this measure. And this was some of her debate in favor of this bill.
It's quite clear that this nation, in all of our founding documents, this is a key component. And so I hope that nobody is worried because we have a motto that includes the word God in there, that would at all give somebody consternation.
So a couple of things. First of all, as a correction, she says that it is in all of our founding documents, but to your point, it's not. But to her point, she says, okay, it contains the word God. What's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is that our most important founding document, the Constitution, does not contain the word God. And in fact, the First Amendment strongly suggests that we should be a nation of secular laws. So that's the first thing. And second, I would suggest that if we think about this as stemming from the 1950s, but it stems from a particular kind of political ideology, and it stems from a real kind of rhetoric and push not to defeat communism, but to distinguish the United States from communism. And some listeners might think to themselves, well, we still want to be distinguished from communism. But research shows that that distinguishing was not just a matter of wanting to align the United States with a kind of Western civilization and Western democracy, but it was also to say that the United States was a nation of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And being aligned with faith, freedom, and free enterprise may well be something that people think of as good or something that people or voters think of as what they want to support or something that people align themselves with. But that is not a universal kind of idea. There are many people who would align themselves in different kinds of ways. Moreover, there are people of faith, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, who would think of things as "In God We Trust" as worshiping idols, and who would think of, who are people of faith, people of strong faith, who, you know, there are U.S. United States Supreme Court cases who have found that asking these kinds of people of faith to look at these mottos and to see these models violates their religious freedom, to say nothing of people who of no faith, and to say or of people of, say, the Buddhist faith, who don't happen to believe in a God, but are of deep faith. And so the problem is this sort of creating something universal that is actually pluralistic.
What will be interesting, no doubt, when this does come to a full debate on the floor, will be where legislators land on the word must. Lest I bury the headline here, this would require schools to display this.
Well, right. And I may be wrong. You know, I tell people that, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I just play a lawyer in a public affairs department at Boise State, but I have studied the First Amendment a lot. And the case that comes to mind for me here is a 1971 case, Lemon v. Kurtzman, that gave us an important three-pronged argument to think through when we have this kind of what I think of as intrusion of religion into the public sphere. Really, this was a case about school funding, but the court nevertheless gave us an answer that said, when can there be religion in public schools, right? And they said that there can't, the government, public schools cannot foster what they referred to as excessive government entanglement with religion, right? Excessive government entanglement with religion. And to figure that out, they issued a test that everybody could look at and to try to figure that out. And the test for us said that the statute would have to, one, have a secular legislative purpose, two, that its principal or primary effect must, here's another must, its principal or primary effect must be one that neither promotes nor inhibits religion. And third, like I just said, that it must not foster excessive government entanglement with religion. And so those are the tests that the court has put forward in other cases. And so when the state of Idaho says you must promote this, you must put this sort of on the wall next to the flag, the question that we should ask as citizens is the government here trying to promote or inhibit religion? And it certainly strikes me in using the word must that they are promoting religion and that violates this case that we have.
That was Dr. Stephanie Martin, Frank and Bethany Church Endowed Chair of Public Affairs at Boise State University, speaking with our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, about a controversial bill making its way through the Idaho legislature. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.